You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. The Nissan Clearout Sales Event is on. Lease the 2019 Qashqai S for zero down from $279 a month at 3.6% APR for 64 months. Scarborough Nissan. Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, up on TSN 2. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Mike Johnson in here for Noodles. We're here until 7 o'clock. Bobby Marks of ESPN later in the hour. But we got a guy in studio here who apparently has been doing the rounds all over Toronto. Longtime NHLer, cup winner, gold medalist in 14. Patrick Sharp, now with NBC as well. What's up, Patrick? How you doing, man?
What's up, guys? It's been a busy day. I am doing the rounds, but it all leads to the TSN building right here, doesn't
right.
it?
All
9 hours later. But once you get in here, there is no shortage of things for you to do.
Right.
So you'll be running the car wash for about the next 5 hours.
That's fine by me. Having fun.
Has anyone stopped you that like it wasn't a scheduled hit and said, since you're here, can we get 5 minutes of your time? Or
No, but I made the mistake to committing to all this before I saw the itinerary. I didn't know it was going to be this jam-packed.
Right.
You know.
It's all good.
We're having fun.
He's got handlers out there. He's got people.
Oh, man.
He's got some muscle out there to make sure that doesn't happen.
Usually the handlers come in studio and just stare at me the whole time.
Isn't that weird?
Oh, it's so weird.
We got to keep it this way. Grappler, keep that in mind. Because they just stare at you like you're asking a dumb question or you're doing something wrong.
It's so unsettling when they're in here.
Especially multiple.
Way. Yeah.
Multiple handlers staring at you.
I don't care how many people are listening or watching, but if there's six people in this room right now, I'd be freaking out.
Yeah. And like phones are going off. Or someone's on their phone the whole time and you're like, is this the worst interview or radio segment?
Or yelling at someone else in our building about our interview.
Right. Well, that happens.
It all happens.
Occasionally. Anyway, good to have you in here. You're an NHL analyst now.
Well,
was that always the plan?
I try to be.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't the plan, but it was a great opportunity. I think I retired on a Saturday night was my final game, and the following Monday was doing games for NBC in the playoffs, and it's a pretty cool opportunity. It wasn't something that I thought I'd be doing that quickly after my career, but I'm excited to be on the team. You guys know when you retire, it's like, you miss being a part of that team, and now I'm working with some good people at NBC. I still get to do some cool things with the Blackhawks, call a few of those games, and live in Chicago. So life is good, miss the game, but I'm still around it quite a bit.
I also knew that when I retired, I needed 2 years in Florida before I did anything.
Yeah.
I didn't want to wait 4 days before I started.
Right back into
That's
it.
A quick turnaround.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, NBC, I mean, Johnny, you do stuff with NBC.
Yeah, got some stuff down there.
You're on the NHL Network. I mean, you grew up here, and the media up here is so hyper-focused on hockey.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like, you know, down in the States? I mean, you're not talking down to people. There's big hockey fans down
No,
there.
It's a little different. I mean, Chicago's fan base is pretty knowledgeable, but we're not breaking down the Hawks the way you guys are breaking down the Leafs. We don't need to. We certainly get into it, and we criticize, and we praise when we need to, but nobody cares who the
backup
what
goalie?
The face-off percentage is of the fourth line center in Chicago right now. So we got a different attitude towards things, but just try to have fun with it as best we can.
Yeah, Patrick Sharp in studio.
How about when you retired? You were obviously a very accomplished player, as Hayes mentioned earlier. But making that transition, you talk about over a weekend where I was playing with these guys. Mm-hmm. Now I might have to call them out. Maybe one of your former teammates from a week ago or whatever, from a month ago, 2 months ago. Was that tricky for you at all?
Yeah, still is. Yeah. I don't really like doing the Hawks games so much because I'm so close to the situation. I prefer the national gig because you can be a little more critical in a positive way. I don't think I'm ever going to be the type of broadcaster that's calling guys out and identifying like glaring mistakes. I still remember how tough it is out there and how difficult the game can be. So I'm just all about the FaceTime. You know what? I got to be out there. I need the attention.
You know what you should do is launch a podcast and just see how that goes for you. Like, no video. No one can see what you look like, who you are, what you're all about. It's
one
all
listener.
Personality.
A blind, not even a Patrick Sharp labeled podcast.
No. Yeah, it's just a hockey podcast.
The Patty Sharp podcast.
Yeah, with some guy, and see where that takes you. Patrick Sharp in studio. So playing in Chicago all that time, I always think of the anthem. Like, there isn't another, outside of maybe in Boston, who was the guy that used to...
Rene Rancourt,
because he would bother me with the fist pumps and stuff. Yeah. So he was a guy, like, I would want to check out. But in Chicago, I mean, it's been famous, like, forever, and I don't know the name of the guy that's currently doing it.
Cornelison, yeah.
Yeah, he is spectacular. But when you're playing there 41 times a year, Like, does it even have an effect on you after a while? Has it just become like, all right, it's an anthem and it's great, but we're ready to play here?
Yeah, there's different moments in the season where it hits home a little bit harder than others, but oftentimes it pumps up the opposing team more than it does the home team. You know, I remember those early days in Chicago, 2008-09, where we were just starting to turn the corner and all of a sudden the building is full. There's 22,000 people. Okay, yeah, that gets the goosebumps going a little bit more, but with all the playoff games and the big moments that the Hawks had between 2009 and 2015, it's like, you know, I'd be lying if I said it got me jacked every single game, but it is cool to see the young guys that come into the organization and kind of looking around, seeing that crowd go nuts for the national anthem.
It's wild,
special.
Man. Yeah, it's like, you guys would have experienced the same thing.
Like, I did the playoffs there when, like, it still gets the thing I could play. I'm like, of course I can't, but you get so fired. I'm like, I think I'm ready to go out there.
Right. Just from the anthem.
Yeah.
Like, he is belting it out.
Yeah, I'm not American or anything, but it's spectacular.
Right.
The energy in the building is great.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I've heard you detail this and other people have detailed it. Like, Chicago, it went through a rough time there for a while with the Blackhawks. And I remember being down there in, I think, 2015. And that would have been, like, you guys were at the height at that point. I was at Wrigley Field. It was in the summer. We were talking to some guy who was just selling beers. And he said the toughest ticket in town is a Blackhawk ticket. But 10 years ago, you could get them for free. Yeah. Like, it just happened that quickly.
Were you buying beers off this guy, or
yes,
were you just talking to him?
No, I'm just talking to him for 15 minutes. I'm on vodka water today at the ballpark.
Yeah, the team, the turnaround is incredible, and you can't really put your finger on one thing. It was kind of a perfect storm of 100 different things. It started with new ownership. A new president comes in. You know, we draft Kane and Taves, sign Marian Hossa. Keith and Seabrook become elite shutdown defensemen. Joel Quenneville takes the team over, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, here we go. We got something special here.
Were you on the team when Q took over?
Yeah, I was there in 2005 in like the dark days.
Like three games in the season?
Four games.
Denny Savard?
Poor Denny Savard.
Was the coach.
Yeah.
Four games in.
Quinville took over for him.
And he was replaced by Q.
And he was hired in the summer as a pro scout. So Coach Q sat there through training camp watching and dissecting the team. And we thought, it's probably a matter of time before this guy's behind our bench.
Right.
And when he did take over, and I know you guys talk about the Leafs here quite a bit, and rightfully so. With the coaching change that we had in Chicago, right away we felt like, okay, we got a leader here that's going to take us in the right direction. We can trust this guy. Not that Dennis was doing a poor job. It's just Joel Quenneville's been around a long time. He's got that presence behind the bench, and his track record spoke for itself.
Yeah, you can't really argue that it was the wrong move.
No,
it worked out like maybe Savard could have got an extra five games.
They'd seen enough.
I think years later, Laviolette got one or two.
You got three in Philly.
Yeah, and Carolina was the third game. They got fired him after that game.
Yeah.
That's like, insane.
You made up your mind in June that you're firing the guy at that point. You ever talk about the ponies with Quenneville? Like, we've had him on around the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, yeah.
Remember we interviewed him? He's like, I'd rather be in the playoffs, but if we're not, I get to go to the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, there's some, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but it's been told before. We were playing Vancouver in 2009. This is before we won anything. And you know how the locker room's set up. It's got the players in one side, then the dry stalls in the other. There's kind of that divider in between, and the coach's room is by the dry stalls. And we heard all this hooting and hollering on an afternoon game in May, and it's coming from the coach's room. This is minutes before Q is going to address the team, and we go out and play a playoff game. I guess he hit
rivals.
Yeah, he hit like a trifecta or whatever it's called, hit all three. Won a huge bet at the Kentucky Derby, walked into the room stone-faced like nothing happened, and just addressed the team. We're like, what? Did something happen that we should know about? Didn't find out till later. We did win that game, so I guess it was a good luck thing.
That is an incredible parlay. Imagine winning like a monster.
Yeah, it was a big one.
I went with a buddy of mine to Saratoga Springs this summer, and he says, well, me and a buddy have season tickets to the horse racing. I sat in my seat. I looked at my ticket. Joel Quenneville. I was like, that's his ticket.
How do you get seasons to a horse?
Well, it's only like 30 days long or something.
Oh, I see.
15 days. I don't know what it is, but you buy a season pass.
Right. Patrick Sharp in studio. 2014 in Sochi. You were there, Olympian, gold medalist. What was the village like? Were you guys in the village?
Yep, we were.
Because we've heard stories that it's like the coolest spot in the world.
Well, who's telling you those stories? Because it wasn't where I was.
Really?
I mean, it was a cool experience. But it was in Sochi, Russia, so you could have told me that we were in any country and I would have believed you. It really wasn't a whole lot of like Russian influence there.
So it's no culture that you're picking up on.
It was just a man-made
condo complex.
Right. Yeah. Facilities everywhere. Hey, there's the curling facility. There's the hockey facility. There's the women's
campus slapped together.
Pretty much. The most fun that we had was just kind of hanging around the dorms or condos with each other, telling stories, watching the other events. I had heard stories from 2010 with all the Blackhawks that were there in Vancouver saying that that was as good as it gets. You know, the you just get the vibe of the Canadian athletes, the Canadian culture. The city of Vancouver was on fire. I could only imagine what that was like. And that gold medal game was as good a hockey as we've ever seen. Russia was great. I had an awesome time. Incredible to be with those guys and that team. Hockey Canada takes care of you so well. But it was just a collection of all-star players put together for a 2 or 3 week tournament. We had a job to do. Let's go do it. That's pretty much my experience.
It was just a machine, that tournament, too.
Oh,
like,
man.
Was there ever any doubt? Like, you guys seemed so much better. Vancouver was fun because it seemed there wasn't a certainty that Canada would win.
Yeah.
It seemed in 14 there was a no-brainer. You rolled through everybody.
That team, and it wasn't like we were filling the net offensively.
No, it was 2-0 every game.
Defensive shutdown. I can count on one hand the mistakes that were made in that whole tournament. Not the goals against, just the actual mistakes. It was a clinic on how to play the game defensively. Excellent players, coaches were fantastic. It was a fun team to be a part of.
So do you think that could ever work in the NHL, though? Like that, obviously you can't have that level of talent, but to expect that type of perfection at any point,
oof,
you know what I mean? In a 7-game series, even to isolate it to that.
I mean, I remember looking around the room thinking this is a pretty big moment here, and nobody really seems to be overwhelmed in this locker room. I mean, you had some legitimate players that just went out there and played as if it was a Tuesday game, Columbus versus Chicago. And to me, that caught my attention, that these guys are calm under pressure. They know how to play. So we're talking about some of the best hockey players in the world. I don't know if you can get that in a regular NHL team.
Right.
I mean, it'd be nice to have that, but I think you're going to have mistakes. Salary cap plays a role in that. But man, that Sochi tournament was crazy to think back that I was even there a part of it.
That was incredible. Patrick Sharp in studio. Speaking of the salary cap, I mean, you guys, whenever you won a cup in Chicago, like three guys had to go.
Yeah.
Did that make it bittersweet at all? I mean, you get your rings in the celebration, but some of the boys are going to have to leave just because of the cap.
Yeah. Did you know it in advance? Like, okay, right away when you went, like, okay, this is not going to last for much longer. Guys are on their way out of here.
The first one, I think that kind of played a small role in why we won in 2010. We knew there was a huge salary cap crunch coming. We lost, I think, 11 players a week after the cup was handed out. And that one stung because we were such a young, close group of guys. Everybody was in their 20s. We're all kind of at the same point in our career. You know, Kane and Taves were youngsters. You know, Marian Hossa was still a young guy, relatively speaking. And all of a sudden, you got 11 guys of that special team out the door. So we kind of got used to it after a while. Credit to the organization for kind of reloading there in 2012. We had a good team in 2013, 14, and then I liked our team in 2015, but I don't think it was as good as the other two. I think we won that championship on the backs of some pretty special performances and the experience that we had just knowing how to win.
Long-time NHLer Patrick Sharp in studio.
How good is Marian Hossa? He was one of the best players of our generation.
His name keeps coming up the more interviews I'm doing today. Everybody wants to talk about Marian Hossa. And first thing I think about when I see Haas is like,
he's still big. I saw him over in Europe.
Yeah.
He still looks like he could step into an ice and play no problem.
He looks like an NHLer. He's supposed to look, right? Yeah. His body's built. He's got the nice haircut. He's always got a nice tan and glow to him. He walks with good posture. He says and speaks all the right things. When you put him on the ice, he's a robot. Never really seems to make a mistake. I played with him for a few years when I was a centerman. He was my winger, and now that it's all said and done, he bailed me out of a few situations, no question about that. Probably the most underrated player on those championship teams, and that's Marian Hossa we're talking about here, Hall of Famer.
Right, yeah. Well, and like a two-way guy, needless to say, but kind of he was in that Datsyuk, Zetterberg type of mold, like this new generation of players where you got to do it both ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like could put up 35, 40 goals, 90 points.
He never really complained. He wasn't on the first unit power play his entire time in Chicago. It was always Kane, Taves, add another player on that power play. Haas always got the second unit time, never complained about it. So he's what you want in a leader, quiet leader.
Yeah. Patrick Sharp again in studio. Airbnb Billet Day coming up, celebrating the common bond between billeting and home sharing. Airbnb has launched Billet Day and will provide a $25,000 donation to support tomorrow's generation of rising hockey stars.
Yeah.
What's this all about? That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it does. I approached by Airbnb to come to Toronto and kind of do the media rounds and talk about billeting and Airbnb, and I thought, well, how am I going to link those two together? But when you really think about it, it's basically the same thing. It's opening up your doors to a guest, helping that person along in their journey. I was hosted by a billet family when I was 15 years old in Ottawa. It was the Weber family out in Richmond, Ontario. And to think that my parents sent me away at 15 to go chase a dream to get to the next level. Like, I got two daughters at home, and in 7 or 8 years, you're telling me one of them's got to go live with a different family. It's about as Canadian as it gets that the Webers opened their doors to my brother, to myself, and helped us get to that next level. I mean, when you're living on your own with a family at 15, you don't know how to cook for yourself and clean and take care of yourself. You need that father figure. You need that family on the road, and it was the Webers for me, and I'm thankful that I was a part of it. So getting back to Airbnb, that's what it's all about. It's just linking the two together, and I'm happy to be here promoting it.
Yeah, it probably doesn't get brought up enough. I mean, truly the fabric of the Canadian Hockey League, junior hockey, like you lived with billets, I lived with billets, you lived with billets. Like, if you play junior anywhere in the country, you've got to rely on it, right? Like, they're the cornerstones of the Canadian Hockey League. Even junior A, junior B, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's so important.
You got to have it.
So important. I mean, it can go south in a heartbeat, too, if you have a tough billet family that's not in it for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. And I'm very thankful that I got linked up with the right family. They helped me get to the next level of my career and create some lifelong memories also. I'm still friends with the family to this day.
Oh, me too. The Robbone family in Guelph. I still know the garage code. I just walk right in and say hello to everybody. It's great relationships you have forever.
Sneak in there one night.
No, I don't need to be doing that.
That's the last thing you need to do.
No.
All right, Patrick, good seeing you, man.
Yeah, thanks for
having
me. Thank
you for doing
it. Appreciate it.
There's Patrick Sharp, longtime NHLer, cup winner, gold medalist, NBC NHL analyst, and obviously up here talking about a really cool initiative with Airbnb and Billet Day. Overdrive continues. Bobby Marks coming up from ESPN. The Raptors now in the top 10 of ESPN's rankings. Very important
stuff. Making the cut.
Very important stuff. We'll touch on that more next. Big Monday nighter tonight. Seattle at home against Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings.
Do you like that?
I think I like Seattle tonight, but we'll see. I mean, at some point this hour, there's not much time left. There's only 40 minutes. Maybe Al's brother will have to make an appearance because he made you some money, saved you some money on Thursday night. He was on the Saints, and the Saints almost blew that game, too. 3 onside kicks in a row recovered by Atlanta. I've never seen that before in my life, and I don't think I'll ever see it again.
No.
This close to Atlanta with the greasiest backdoor cover in the history of football.
Did the special teams coach keep his job?
I think he did because I haven't heard anything. They still won the game.
Yes.
But Sean Payton was losing it. Losing it. Did you see Nick Saban over the weekend, too?
Well, he's trying to say that was an unfair play at the end of the game.
Well, but no, he was freaking out when they had 12 men on the
field. Yes.
And, there's 12 men on the field. You're dealing with college kids. I guess, you know, the special teams coordinator was technically in charge of that, but Saban is a guy that loses his mind publicly all the time. Like, can you imagine what this guy's doing behind closed doors?
I don't mind. For whatever reason, I root against Alabama.
No, oh, everybody
they're
does.
They're the Yankees. Class are too good. And
yeah.
They're unfair.
They're the Yankees.
When he was up there saying, I'll never leave to go to the pros, and then 3 days later, he was coaching the Dolphins. It just...
Yeah. And then flipped the other way.
And then went the other way.
Make sure you bail on winter or give yourself an opportunity to bail on winter and win a spot on TSN 1050's Superfan Spring Break. It's an ultimate hockey vacation from bookseats.com. Join Toronto as they take on Tampa and Florida down in Florida, including round-trip flights, 4 nights accommodations, and tickets to both games in late February. To enter, you follow us on Instagram at TSN 1050 and follow at bookseats.com on Instagram. Find our latest Superfan Spring Break post and tag who you are bringing on the trip. On Friday, we'll announce one handle. You have 10 minutes and 50 seconds to call in and claim your prize. If you don't, we move on to the second handle, so on and so forth. Visit tsn1050.ca for all the details. Bookseats.com, custom flight, hotel, and ticket packages to events around the world, simplifying the way fans travel. Bobby Marks of ESPN will be joining us here in just a moment. Raptors, big week. like it should, it's a big week in terms of like prominent games. They could lose all three and it doesn't really matter because of the start and because I think we just have belief in who they are and what they've built and where they're going. They're on their way to 50 wins, 50 plus. They're going to be a top four or five team in the East. But these are the games you wait for because entertainment value,
mm-hmm.
you know, bragging rights. Miami wants to be a team that's included in the Eastern Conference hierarchy. We'll see what they got tomorrow night.
Feels important for them to finish in the top four or top three.
Yes.
Because it seems like five better teams than the rest in the East, if you're going to include Miami as one of them. Like, you don't want to be in the four spot and have to face a Miami or Philly
yeah.
or Boston, Celtics Milwaukee. Or whoever. Like, those are all legit teams that could beat Toronto in the playoffs.
Yes.
Whereas if they play any of the other teams that may make it, they'd be favored by quite a bit.
Oh, but man.
The top three is important.
They look dialed in. They could keep climbing right to the top of it. They're just, they look like they have that much confidence.
I honestly don't see why they can't win another title. Like, I understand what the counter will be. They don't have that assassin like they had with Kawhi Leonard. I get that. But they are so, they're deep.
They the depth do have, doesn't matter as much in the playoffs.
But they do have high-end talent depth. Like, Siakam, VanVleet, Lowry, Ibaka. I think Gasol, as the season goes on, his value will be more exposed. And he'll start hitting more shots, and he'll bring more offensively.
Yeah.
Like, those are legitimate players.
Very good players.
Like, legitimate players. If it becomes a shootout or it becomes like an ISO game where one guy's going to have to take over, I don't know if Siakam can do that in April, May, and June. I don't know if he can. But I think collectively, A, they're probably the best coach team in the NBA or real close to it. Defensively, they buy in 100%, and that will only be amplified come the playoffs. And in the Eastern Conference, there aren't any teams that scare me. So if you can get to the dance, anyone can win a Game 7. Anyone can win a 7-game series. And who in the West terrifies you? The Lakers don't terrify me. Not like Golden State did even a year ago, even right. with the injuries.
Well, they don't terrify you right now because of recency bias because the Raptors went in there and beat them already.
Absolutely.
They might develop and continue to grow.
Paul George not in that game, I don't think.
That was the Clipper game, and they lost.
Oh, sorry,
I'm talking
game.
About the Lakers.
Yeah.
The Clippers scare me.
Yeah.
The Clippers would be favored. The Lakers would be favored, but it wouldn't be yeah. David.
They got Davis
Goliath.
And LeBron, but they don't. You know, they're the rest no. of their players. Danny Green. I mean, like they got good players.
Yeah, Kuzma's good player.
Yeah. yeah,
and Anthony Davis has never done it in the playoffs. He's never really been given the opportunity.
Right.
But does he have it in him to grind?
And you have to consider.
Series?
I mean,
I don't know.
I don't know if the West is deeper than the East.
Yes.
The road to the final presumably will be more difficult, more taxing, maybe,
it
in the West
be.
Than the East.
It should be.
And who knows the energy, the fitness, the health of those teams when they get there. So maybe that's something to consider as well.
Yeah, but, and I guess health applies to the Raptors, too. I mean, yeah. Siakam could go out in the first round, and it changes everything.
Yes.
You know, VanVleet, Lowry, whatever. It's not like the Raptors are immune to that. But we talked about it earlier. Even though Nick Nurse doesn't care about culture, well, I shouldn't say that. He's not willing to talk publicly about an obsession with culture. He's not willing to grant it as much credence as other teams do in other sports.
His culture might be show up to the arena and play your rear end off, and that's our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, guys are different these days. We used to walk out with a cold beer in our hands, and we'd be going somewhere together. Now it's every guy on an iPhone, and they're their own little operation. And when you come together at the arena, you got to play well.
You get a sense that he might be, he's very affable in public. Like, he's the kind of guy you might want to go have a beer with and shoot the breeze with, and he seems to be well-versed to talk and friendly. In the sense that he might be a little harder behind the scenes.
Yes, absolutely. At the right time.
Yeah, not all the time, but when appropriate, he's not afraid to crack the whip and you know,
yes.
Get after guys.
Well, he told that to us. He's told the story publicly before after game one of the playoffs last year. They lost by 1 point, I believe it was, to Orlando.
At home, yeah.
1 point. It was game one. Everyone knew they were still going to run off four straight and win in five. That's exactly what they did. By all accounts, he brought them in, read them the riot act, went over tape, didn't even actually go over that much tape. I think started going over tape and
then
said, forget
it.
I don't need to go over the tape anymore. We know he didn't perform well. And he focused specifically on the defensive play and said, if you guys buy in, I'm telling you, you can win a title here.
Mm.
And the rest is history. And it worked out. And that became his, like, win one for the Gipper speech or whatever.
Right.
Or the meltdown. Moment. moment. And the rest is history for Nick Nurse. And he just got announced today was Coach of the Month.
They give coaches of the month in basketball?
Absolutely, man.
That's such a
such a
grease.
And he deserves it.
Unnecessary.
He deserves it.
Not to take away from Nick and the Raptor love, but like, come on, Coach of the Month.
Here is longtime NBA executive and now NBA insider with ESPN, Bobby Marks. How you doing, Bobby?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
We're fine. We're doing well up here, man. The Raptors are 15-4 and
vaulted into the top 10.
Do they give executives of the month?
Yeah, where are you at?
Like, where does it end?
They don't even do. I think you got to wait until after the year. And I don't even know if that's even a league honor anymore. I think it's something. I don't know who's. I guess maybe the other executives.
The executives give it to each other.
Yeah, they do. You actually vote. You have to vote. I think all 30 vote, and you can't vote for yourself. So I think that's how they do it.
I like it.
But if I'm giving an award, I'm giving to, it's probably to their player development group. There, I mean, to get these guys You know, Terrence Davis is of the world ready when you've got injuries to Kyle and, you know, certainly Serge and Malcolm Miller and Chris Boucher and guys like that. I mean, I think if I'm going to give an early season award, it's to that back end of that coaching staff there.
I think that's 100% valid, and they're getting a lot of love up here. I mean, Terrence Davis is being compared to a guy on his own team, Fred VanVleet, someone who went undrafted. Masai and company found him, signed him, and we all know what VanVleet's all about. We all know what he's going to get paid by the end of this year. And Terrence Davis, even though it's very early into his career, he looks very comfortable, but more importantly, looks very confident. And how do you seek that out? I mean, as a former executive yourself, you would have seen a lot of college kids, a lot of European players. How do you find confidence in a player and believe that it's going to translate in the NBA?
Well, a lot of it has to do with, you know, going to the pre-draft camp, seeing these guys work out, Portsmouth, bringing them in there for your individual workout. The best thing for him, and, you know, we get caught up in if a guy doesn't get drafted in the second round or, with Terrence going undrafted, I mean, he has basically his pick of two-way contract, and he bet on himself in summer league and played extremely well, and it's worked out with him for, you know, similar to what Fred was able to do. And it's kind of that next man up approach, and that's been the bread and butter of this coaching staff in the front office. You know, I mean, we've talked about Pascal forever, about being picked in the late 20s, and, you know, he wasn't picked in a lottery. They've been a playoff team since, what, 2012, 13, or 13, 14? Mm-hmm. And it's basically these, you know, undrafted, late first, early second round guys that kind of mesh in with what they already had along with some good trades.
Fred VanVleet, you talk about a guy rising up the ranks, 19 points per game, 7.5 assists. How big of a contract is he in line at four? He's not a max player, I wouldn't imagine. What's he staring at when he finally gets back to it?
Well, I think he's hurt a little bit based on where the market's going to be this summer. It's not like last year where we had, you know, 15, 16 teams with a lot of room, cap space. We're really just looking at Atlanta. Who's got, you know, Trae Young. We've got Charlotte, who, you gave big money to Terry Rozier. Memphis has, Ja Morant there. Cleveland has, Darius Garland and Colin Sexton. So it's kind of a process of elimination. But I did talk to a team that didn't have cap space, and they were asking, what do you think Fred's number is? I thought it was 18 to 20, somewhere around there. And they said, we just had our, you know, internal meetings and we have guys talking about 25, 26 million. I said, whoa, that's a big number. But hey, I didn't think D'Angelo Russell was a $27 million guy last year. And I think what we learned is the market dictates it. The market dictates as well as your play, as far as where your contract is going to be. But they've got an advantage. They've got, you know, full bird rights. They can exceed the cap to bring him back. You know, he's been there, won a championship, so that they basically are, it's almost like with, you know, I guess with Kawhi, you know, you're basically in-house recruiting him for the year, and hopefully it works out a little bit better there.
Yeah, a lot better.
It's pretty good right now, though.
Yeah, no, it's not bad. It's definitely not bad. And I think Kyle Lowry returning to the lineup and how healthy he is in his role the rest of the year will factor into the value of VanVleet in a way as well, because they were sharing the backcourt. I assume when Kyle comes back, they'll do that again. You know, starting games, finishing games in the fourth quarter, the two of them in the backcourt. But Kyle Lowry has always been, you know, the heartbeat of this team, the captain, the alpha dog, whichever way you want to describe it. And he's still got immense talent. He's playing well before he got injured. But I think Van Vliet has the potential to surpass him this year if he has not already as an impact guy. How do you think Nick Nurse will handle that in terms of, you know, sharing the ball and specifically sharing the backcourt between Van Vliet and Lowry?
Well, it's almost a, you know, you never want to see injuries, but it's almost a blessing with Kyle's injury, because I, my concern with both those guys, their minutes were heavy. I mean, right? I mean, they were at 36, 37, you know, right there, top 10 in the league. And especially for Fred, just because I didn't know if he can handle that for the season. I think with, you know, Kyle being out for a while here, kind of gives him a rest, kind of gets his body fresh for when he does come back here. So I think you'll probably see a lot of it, what they did, you know, earlier in the year. I think you're going to see a heavy workload here. But I think there's, what the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks showed us, that there is confidence of guys that, you know, the Terrence Davis of the world, that that can come off the bench and give you any relief. And it'll be interesting when we get closer to the deadline. You know, is there a, you know, is there a point guard out there that maybe you can kind of give yourself a little bit more of an insurance? You know, the trade, the restrictions on free agents get lifted in about 2 weeks here, and it opens up the market. So I think that's kind of be something to watch. But I think we're going to probably see the continual, see probably some heavy work, you know, minutes with both guys.
With Bobby Marks of ESPN, the story of Carmelo Anthony is well documented. He returns to Portland, and his numbers have been off the charts. And I honestly, I can't believe it. Like, I'm looking at this guy's numbers, and it's not like he didn't have that talent or capability, but he hasn't been in the league.
No,
like,
people are all tweeting saying, I would have never predicted this, and I'll eat it on this one. And everyone else is saying, me too.
You're looking at
one
of them, man. I didn't see this coming. And Portland, you know, they're on the outside looking in. I'm not sure they can get back in. Is it crazy to think he could be a trade chip come the trade deadline if they're officially out at that point?
Well, for he can't. He can't be traded because he signed his contract in late November, and you have a three-month restriction. But it's a fascinating story, guys, because, I mean, that Portland team was taken on water. I mean, they were losing games, and, you know, he's kind of come in, and you're right, he hasn't played in a year. And he's playing, you know, basically starter minutes here. And how does your body handle that from when you're sitting out of here? And we're pegging him, hey, if he comes back in the league, he's going to have to be a rotational player in 15 to 20 minutes. And game one, they start him right off the bat. And he's been great. I mean, he fits, because that's basically an ISO-heavy team with Lillard and McCollum and Zach Collins being out. He fits a role right now. We'll see if it continues, you know, down the stretch. But I thought when we were doing this, we were talking free agency the summer, and we got to the point, I think, second week of July, and they asked me for my top five free agents left, and I had Carmelo on there because I thought there was still a role for him. You know, we diminished everything he did based on Oklahoma City, how it ended in Houston, but the guy can come off the bench and give you 12 to 14 points, and we're seeing a little bit more of that right now.
The two L.A. teams have done exactly what we expected that they would do. They're 17-3 with the Lakers, 15-6 with the Clippers. Again, Paul George missed the month of November, effectively, and certainly, you know, late October, and Kawhi's in and out of the lineup, yet they're still putting up massive numbers. I think we're going to be posing this question and debating it throughout the year, but as of December 2nd, who do you think is the best team in L.A.?
I think the Clippers are, and I know we haven't seen a great body of work with Kawhi and Paul because of injuries and how, you know, Doc has handled, you know, the maintenance issue. I like them their defensive mentality. When you've got, you know, Patrick Beverley and you've got Montrezl Harrell, guys like that, they've got, you know, Mo Harkless, and then those two players, there. And I think that the Lakers, I think they should be applauded for their start. I mean, 17-3, 17-4, but I think it's a little bit smoke and mirrors because of, you look at the schedule they've played, I think it's the, you know, fifth easiest so far. And it feels like every time I turn on TV, they're playing Memphis or Oklahoma City or, you know, one of those other teams. And you saw in the Denver and the Toronto loss, you saw it last night in Dallas that, you know, hey, when the competition gets a little bit better here, things change. But when you've got those two monsters with AD and LeBron, it gives you a chance. And I think what it's done is that you can bank games and you can give yourself some separation from the Clippers and Denver when you get in from a seeding standpoint.
Great stuff as always, Bobby. We always appreciate you taking time for us.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you.
There's Bobby Marks.
Guest of the month right there.
Guest of the month.
I had one little nugget, and you didn't let me get to it. The rejigging of the schedule in the second round.
Oh, yeah, we should have asked that.
The tournament.
We've been talking about
tournament.
It Well, where were you on that one?
I was just going to, and you're like, see you later. Thanks, Bobby. I'm like, I wasn't going to say, hey, Bobby, by the way.
But that I didn't know you were coming in. I didn't realize I needed to call you in from the bullpen on that. I thought you'd just pounce.
I should have.
Kind of wish you had, because I'd be curious to see what you would have said.
Well, as a former executive, he would have said, that's a great idea. Like, I love the idea of an extra pick. But I think he's reasonable enough to say the players are not going to care. Like, for those of you just tuning in, there is a report out there that this in-season tournament the NBA is looking at implementing in a couple of years, the winning team will receive a draft pick, as if the players would care at all about that.
What do you think they might call this in-season tourney? It'd be some sort of sponsored element or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Sponsored by Gatorade.
The Dr. Pepper Cup?
Yes, absolutely. You know what I was thinking you should put on the line?
Man.
Here's the only thing you can put on the line, outside of money. Like you guys have said, if you put, you know, $50 million.
It'd have to be those guys make so much money. You can't put $5 million up. They wouldn't even care for $5
million. What about this, though?
They wouldn't.
What about this? Cap space for your team.
Oh. That has to be used on existing players.
Exactly.
That or 10 days off.
They take that off anyway, though. A lot of these guys are like, I'm not playing. 10 days off would be spectacular mid-season. If you win the tournament, you just get to disappear for 10 days. That would be very
mandatory
enticing.
Off days like the NHL CBA
right.
has.
No workout, no practice. Tiki bar, Cancun.
Nice.
Show
Private
off.
Private jets only.
But I think cap space
would be
that would be. You know what that would be great for, too? Is the fans would get into it then.
You'd get invested.
Because if you're putting up a draft pick and it's like a second rounder, who cares?
Dude,
but
it's not. It's all around. Sorry, it's dumb. It's not going to work. They'll never get them to care. Yeah. They want to win a championship. These super teams, power teams, like they don't care about the Dr. Pepper Cup.
No, they won't when it initially gets.
But if you're one of the three good players and you know now that if you win this, your team can exceed the cap by 10% for you guys.
Johnny, the good players are going to get their cash anyway. Like,
but I think this is something that all sports should be looking into. The NHL in particular.
I'm grasping at straws here, though. I'm just trying to find if I'm finding it.
Think about this, the hard salary cap.
Yeah.
You get a chance, you know, you can go $10 million over.
You win the Dr. Pepper Cup.
Problem is, though, that all the teams that don't win, like, okay, so you know how we're paying for that $10 million going over? Out of our pocket.
That's fine. Then win the cup.
That's not fine. The players are still paying for it.
Win the cup.
But the players are paying for it.
You're not listening.
In a cap,
the players are paying for it.
Whether I'm on the team that wins or not, we're paying for it.
What do you mean they're paying for it?
Well,
because they get half of the hockey revenue?
Because it's going to be $10 million more that's going to have to come straight out of escrow.
$10 million is such a negligible amount when you consider the big picture of the NHL cap. Like, what is the roof? $84 million?
Well, it's 700
times 31?
Players, so it's 15 grand each.
It's a lot. Exactly. I think I'd be willing to gamble 15 grand. Maybe not everybody in the league, but 15 grand on the idea that you can add a significant piece.
When so many guys make 700, tax down to 350, cost of living down to 250, you're going to ask them to just kick in 15 grand like it's nothing?
Well, make it a percentage then. For that, you can negotiate
Rich
this
players
in the
won't
CBA.
Hear that either.
You give me 10 days off at the Tiki Hut, I'll take that more serious than the Stanley Cup. I'll be the hardest working guy on the ice.
Blocking shots, face first.
Yes.
No problem.
It is true.
I will win every major award at that little tournament. The Hart, the Vesna.
You're going to get the Pierce.
The Selkie.
Flash.
The Cancun mini
in-season
tournament.
The Cancun Cup.
Brought to you by Cancun. And the boys get to go down there and run amok for 10 days.
And it's played in Cancun.
The final.
Tournament. Yeah, the final, and then you just pack
you just
bags
stay.
If you're staying.
I like that
skate
idea.
Skate off to your suite on the ocean.
They would care about it then.
All 31 teams in the NHL in Cancun at the same time.
Elbows up.
Hold
Senor Frogs.
Grind in your corner.
Watch yourself. All right, Best Bets brought to you by ProLine next. All right, time now for our Best Bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the NBA point spread tonight. Utah's in Philly. Utah got embarrassed yesterday. Yes, it's a back-to-back, but they have to show up tonight. They have to. I'm taking the 5.5. They're too good of a team. They're well-coached. They got talent. They got pride. They got smoked. Smoked. It's back-to-back. Philly's a good team, but I'm on Utah tonight. Milwaukee is laying 17 points against New York.
Wow.
17 points.
That's a big number.
Still taking them.
I'm on Milwaukee.
Wow.
I've never... That's a football score.
17.
17. Milwaukee... Now, they're maybe the best team in the league, close to it. They don't lose. They're at home. And New York is New York. They're a joke. I'm on Milwaukee.
All right.
And I like Chicago to cover at Sacramento. Throw down 20. You can score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Speaking of the Raptors, our poll question brought to you by JerseyFactory.com. The Raptors are 15-4 to start the year. Have they fallen short, met, or surpassed your expectations heading into the season? You guys want to answer that? I don't see how they haven't surpassed our
expectations.
They've surpassed
them. I mean, how could you
pick either?
I thought
without Kawhi, Gonzo.
Like I didn't see 15-4.
I saw
Lowry, Seattle,
11-8, plus the injuries.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. 85% of the vote surpassed.
Good.
14% met expectations. 1 contrarian, 1% falling short. Thought they'd be 16-3.
Like, who is that?
I got to know who. I want to see who voted falling short.
These polls, it's got to be like, you got to be able to see who votes. They got to change it, Twitter.
They should expose people for their voting.
Just like voting for major awards.
Yeah.
In the NHL, I believe they finally are exposed.
I don't think that's official yet.
Yes, it is.
Really?
Everyone releases
Lafreniere. Yes, it is.
I like Lafreniere to make the team this year. I think he should be a big part of Canada. I want him on the team, and I want him playing.
For the second year in a row.
That's right. Captain material.
Should be there.
Anyway.
I like the World Junior ad with you in it, though. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
It was well done.
Where'd they find that pic? Did you have that picture? Or?
Well, they just said, I didn't know what they were doing. They said, can you and Bob and James just take a picture? I was like, yeah, and it was a picture of a World Junior for when I was in it, but I didn't know it was going to be.
That's great.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah, it's cool with the names up on the wall, and before they became superstars, they started at the World Juniors.
Who was aside from yourself, who was the best player on that World Junior team you played on?
Todd Harvey.
Oh, he was so good back then, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah.
He's an awesome guy, awesome player.
Yeah.
I loved everything about that guy.
Todd Harvey.
Yeah. It wasn't Alexander Daigle. It wasn't...
Yeah.
I mean, there was a bunch of great guys, but Todd Harvey was just a great captain and an awesome guy.
Who had the best career in the NHL?
Ryan Smith was a pretty good career.
Yeah.
Tux had a good career. Me and Tux and Ryan Smith were the fourth line.
With Darcy playing in the middle?
Me.
That's right, you played center then, too. That's a pretty good fourth line.
Yeah, it was good.
Who else was on? Like, Jovo was on that team,
Jovo,
wasn't he?
Wade Redden.
Oh,
we only had one
career.
Guy that didn't play in the NHL.
Really?
Was that the one? Where was it?
Red Deer, yeah.
You had those goofy cowboy hats on after
one. Yes, yes, yes.
Not goofy.
Yeah.
Goofy to me.
Anyway, yeah, we weren't on the team.
I'd wear one to make the team, but I wouldn't wear a cowboy hat unless I had to.
Right. The poll question brought to you by JerseyFactory.com. Custom team uniforms and logos at prices to suit any budget. Play like a pro, look like a pro. JerseyFactory.com. Leafs in action tomorrow night. Raptors in action tomorrow night.
Big football game tonight.
I don't think I'll ever get annoyed by this. I could play this every single day on the show. Al's brother, you picked a winner on Thursday night, and apparently you have been activated to make the pick for me tonight. Pick wisely, my friend.
I'm liking Seattle tonight.
I love that pick, Seattle. -3, if I'm not correct. -3.
I like it, too.
Seattle.
I like it, too. Al, you have done a solid for your old buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Al's brother... taking Seattle. I'm surprised that's the line. I mean, Minnesota's a really good team. Really good team. But Seattle's one of the best teams in the league at home. Anyway, we're out of here. Johnny, good seeing you, man.
Yeah, man.
Thanks
good
for
to be
doing
here.
This, buddy. I don't know who's in with us tomorrow, but you and I... Oh, okay. Jonas Siegel's in here.
You, we'll be back tomorrow at
Jonas,
4 p.m.
and I will be back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
That's right.
Scarborough Nissan is one of the largest volume Nissan dealers in the GTA. And they'd like to thank their customers for the continued support during the construction on Eglinton. Come on in. They're open.
The Nissan Clearout sales event is on now. Lease the 2019 Qashqai S for zero down from $279 a month at 3.6% APR for 64 months. Includes $300 bonus cash.
Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Visit them on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Ave. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. The Nissan ClearOut sales event is on. Lease the 2019 Qashqai S for zero down from $279 a month at 3.6% APR for 64 months. Scarborough Nissan. Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.